progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, hour number two on your Wednesday. Good to be with you. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, we'll spotlight Jeff Stein. Listen to that interview. We'll also more than likely spotlight Michael Broadcorp, kind enough to join us. Of course, a noted author. You can find his exceptional book, The Girls Are Gone, an amazing read. Missing in Minnesota as well is the website associated with that book. But, of course, he's been covering politics here in Minnesota for quite a while. He's had some very interesting thoughts on not only Governor Walz announcing his reelection campaign, but the Republican response. And I asked him to join us to talk a little bit about that. Hi, Michael.
Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. I first of all, just get off the start here. What's your thoughts? Walz, a lot of people expected that he was going to be announcing his reelection campaign. I think that he definitely is in a good position for it. I don't think he's necessarily seeing anything on the other side as far as any of the candidates that really are overwhelming or extremely populist. So, I mean, I think this was an expected announcement.
I think it was, too. I think it was, and all indications are that he was going to do this. You know, there was some kind of scuttlebutt as to whether Lieutenant Governor Flanagan would be running with him. But they had an error-free announcement yesterday. They're both running for re-election. And, you know, the kind of the conventional wisdom, I think, nationally is folks, you know, on the Republican side are feeling that it's going to be a good cycle. But the question will be is if there's any type of national wave, one way or the other, what will happen in Minnesota? And will it be reflective of what's going on across the country? You know, I've been a part of election cycles in Minnesota where Minnesota has mirrored what's gone on nationally. I've also been there on election night when Minnesota bucked the trend, both from the Republican side and from the Democratic side, in terms of winning across the country. So, you know, Minnesota voters are finicky. They are, obviously my favorite voters, but they're finicky, and we'll see what they end up deciding next election day.
One of the things that's interesting, and just talk about this in the news cycle right now in regards to the Democrats, because if you're going to look at a weakness that Walz has, I'm not sure necessarily his pandemic response is the weakness the Republicans are looking for, but there definitely was a lot of people on the Democratic side who were furious about Line 3. Now you've got this announcement today from Biden about stopping the sulfur mine up by Ely. I'm not sure how much Walz had to say about that. It might have been something separate there, but he sure is not out there upset about it in any capacity. It almost feels like, to a point, is there an element here, do you think, to this decision by Biden, who as well has also seen an undercut of his support from, you know, Democrats because of the Line 3 and some of these other environmental issues? Do you feel as if this is some sort of an attempt to say, okay, let's smooth things over before we get into that election cycle in 2022?
I think you raise a great point. I mean, one of the best years for Republicans in the history of Minnesota politics was in 1978. And there was some, you know, in the 1978 election, there was some infighting amongst Democrats about issues related to northern Minnesota, BWCA, and environmental issues. So, you know, there have been a number of instances in the last few months where, prominent Minnesota Democrats have been there's been some criticism yielded towards them. There's been some protests on some of the support for Line 3. So the question is coming into next election cycle, one of the things that I think Republicans need in this state to have a successful election turnout is they need there to be some DFL infighting. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's pretty fair to say that what Biden did today could have an impact on keeping Democrats together. Mm-hmm.
I would agree on that, too. And I will say this, the protests I've seen against, you know, Governor Walz so far, I know there have been some from the right, but the far more organized and seem the far more passionate ones right now are the ones coming from the left.
There's no question about it. And the Democrats right now, is as much as people say nationally that this is going to be a good year for Republicans, I don't think you're necessarily seeing that translate in necessarily right now into Minnesota, because you know, there are, you know, the Republicans just got a candidate, what I would call a credible candidate for the Secretary of State just last week. I'm not a huge fan of particularly Scott Jensen's campaign, who I think is, you know, in someone in the driver's seat in the governor's race. So nationally, I think Republicans are feeling that it could be a good year. The question is, what's going to happen in Minnesota? And to your point about some of those protests, yeah, I mean, there is certainly, you know, there have been a number of protests at, you know, I think Attorney General Ellison had an event where he was disrupted. I know I've seen an event with Senator Klobuchar, Senator Smith. I know Governor Walz had some issues. And so that, what that shows to the, you know, to the layperson, it says, oh, look, there's all this, you know, dissatisfaction, there's frustration. But what that also shows, Matt, I think to your point, is they're showing some intensity. They're showing some interest. And if you can kind of bring that intensity into the party, into the fold underneath one tent, and keep people mobilized, that can be a very beneficial, very, very beneficial thing. Politics are all about family fights and disagreements. And the question is, can you leave the can the family leave the restaurant together, even though they've had that disagreement? Mm-hmm. And I think the success will be for coming into this election cycle. You always expect those type of fights, but when we get to voting day, is everyone kind of on the same page? And I think, to your point, I think it's fair to say that, that what Biden did today could help keep the Democrats all working off the same page.
More unified, indeed. Speaking of family fights, I mean, I, one of the things I made when Walz made this announcement, and once again, it was early. It was like 6 a.m. when the campaign announced he's running again, which is really early. But he had made the announcement. The first thing I said is, well, if you look at who the front-running candidate is for the GOP right now in Scott Jensen, and you also look at the scandal that's gripped the Minnesota GOP, this is an easy layup. Almost immediately, it became – I kept waiting. When's the Minnesota GOP going to put out a statement? I mean, this is usually politics 101. The guy, the state, the governor is going to run again for re-election. It's a statewide race. There's usually an announcement. There's usually something printed up. All they need to do is just get it into the fax machine and into the emails, and it's gone to the media. The reality is, it took hours for the Minnesota GOP to put out a rebuttal statement to Walz's re-election announcement.
Yes, and it's, and you look, you know, and as an observer of Minnesota politics, someone who likes to kind of analyze some of the tactics. It was a glaring omission. It's politics 101. You know, the news had kind of broken roughly, you know, I think around 4 or 5 o'clock the night before. There were some reports on social media that the governor was going to be, governor and lieutenant governor were going to be making an announcement the following morning. They did. News got out. And there was just, it was crickets from the GOP. That's an absolutely standard day in kind of operational politics, Matt, as I know you have a lot of expertise in too, where you will see that, you know, when the GOP candidates are announcing for governor, Ken Martin and the DFL and their other allied groups are banging out detailed messaging, you know, press releases, their social media tweets. Sometimes they're doing some micro-targeting sites where they're driving a message and they're getting their supporters engaged. There was nothing out of that on the Republican side. The Republican Party of Minnesota hasn't tweeted. I haven't checked since, you know, earlier today, but I don't believe the Republican Party has tweeted in, since September 11th. I don't think David Hand, who's the new party chair, has tweeted himself in over 2 years. Social media, and finding ways to communicate and target voters by the means in which they get information is critically important in an election cycle. So if you're the governor, if you're the lieutenant governor, the ability to stand up, issue a press release, have your press event, that's basically an absolute free messaging day for them because there was no substantive contrast provided. You had, you know, each of the campaigns on the Republican side in their own way, but they're tripping over each other's message. There wasn't a unified message against Walz. There wasn't a unified message on his record, and that's just a free day to do that stuff. So I think it shows how consumed the party continually is in the aftermath of Anton Lazaro's donations and his arrest, the resignation of Jennifer Carnahan as chair. This is a party that has not picked up the ball and is ready to compete one-on-one in a race against the DFL and their allied groups. And, you know, as someone who's observing politics and watching it, I think it's a worthwhile observation to make because it ultimately shows that while this may be a horse race or this may be a car race, the horses aren't the same and the cars aren't being driven and produced in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it really provided, I think, a huge advantage for the DFL, for the governor, for the lieutenant governor to message about how they want to talk about their past 4 years, what they want to do for the next 4 years in an encumbered way. And I think that is a huge gift to them.
Mm-hmm. And they were able to control that news cycle for that day pretty much because of
Absolutely.
That. Okay, and I want to be careful how I say this. I have heard from someone who has better knowledge than I do that there is – that, and this lack of attack on the day that Walz announces his reelection campaign, it kind of points to there being some of this, that there is a lot of infighting still within the leadership of the Minnesota GOP between Carnahan loyalists and the rest of the GOP, who basically they're feeling like that they should not have turned on Jennifer Carnahan, that was wrong. And there seems to be some bitterness there. Is, you know, you have a better finger on the pulse of the GOP. Is there still a lot of upheaval going on within the GOP headquarters right now?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that there is still. I mean, they're just not firing on all pistons. To use the car analogy again, they're just not firing on all pistons. And to get to a situation where, you know, the internet's on the computer now, Matt. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you can send it. Someone, you know, one person can send a tweet. One person can send a press release and an email. That's the beauty. That's the power that social media and those things possess. And I think that it shows just how operationally deficient and operationally behind the Republican Party is, whether it's caused by internal strife, whether it's caused by one side not trusting the other side or there being an inability, but they're just not able to, you know, remain focused on what a party exists for. And that's what's good. That is where this frustration, you know, look, let's be clear. There's, as I said before, there is frustrations and there are fights in every political party. They happen all the time. But when the disagreements rise to the level that it's impacting your ability to even responsibly message, just to send out a tweet, I mean, to post on Facebook. I mean, this is a political party that I don't think has posted on Facebook or posted on social media in any substantive way. The last I checked, which was earlier today, has been over a month ago. And if you think about how many months we have till the next election cycle, to the next big vote, not having a political party that's able to send out even a tweet or post on social media, that is incredibly detrimental to your ability to engage your voters on what you think a message could be. And so from someone who I think we both have done, like to look at kind of the tactics and kind of the operation, the Republican Party is literally in the Stone Age right now.
Looking at the candidates for governor on the Republican side, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of traditional Republicans that are hoping that either Paul Gazelka or Michelle Benson starts gaining some speed. Benson was clearly going to be trying to, you know, cultivate her suburban cred to try to, you know, within the Republican circles to say, hey, I can win in the suburbs. Hey, give me a chance. Gazelka, I don't know if he was going to try to out far right Jensen in rural Minnesota. He might win Brainerd, but I don't know where he was going to go. But what I found was one thing that was very interesting that raised an eyebrow. Representative Pat Garofalo, who has been on the far right at times, has over the last few years has become more moderate. And I think it's because he understands his district is changing. As a matter of fact, you actually called, you know, brought the point with him that he was calling out misinformation about vaccines a few days ago, that, you know, he was, you know, which is a much more of a moderate stance nowadays. But he is this is a tweet from the 14th. I'll be hosting a listening session for one of the leading candidates for governor to defeat Governor Walz, Dr. Scott Jensen. Jensen is on the far right of the party. The first thing I said to myself is that if suburban Republicans are starting to embrace Jensen, I have no idea where Benson and Gazelka are going to go. But that's a bad sign for them and a sign that Jensen actually might indeed be the nominee for the Republican Party at this point.
I think it's fair to say. I saw that tweet that Representative Garofalo sent out. I've always been, Pat, I live in Eagan. Pat represents Farmington, not too far away from each other, but I'm a little more north. I've always, you know, been a fan of Representative Garofalo. Don't agree with him or any politician on necessarily any issue. And so the fact that he's started to align himself with Jensen, I think is an indication of where Jensen's place is in this race and where he's at. And I absolutely can't be more clear with anyone. It shouldn't be clear with anyone who follows me on social media that I don't believe that's where the Republican Party should be. I don't think that that's where any candidate for governor should be on the Republican or Democratic side. I can't begin to tell you how much I'm not supportive of Dr. Jensen's candidacy, Scott Jensen's candidacy, how he's messaged, what he's talked about, and what he represents as a candidate. I think is just entirely going to be problematic. I think one of the best examples of why I think he's a very, very bad candidate and a very bad political tactician is, what was Scott Jensen messaging on? What did Scott Jensen release a video on yesterday, on the day that Tim Walz and Peggy Flanagan, the governor and lieutenant governor, announced that their reelection campaign? That's a free day for Jensen to take and message on why he thinks they shouldn't have been elected, why he thinks they've done a bad job, and what he thinks, how to draw a contrast for the next 4 years. Scott Jensen went to social media and was talking about and felt the need to defend Joe Rogan and wanted to release a debate on horse dewormer. That's the danger of Scott Jensen. If you're a Republican candidate out there and you want to talk about issues that you think are going to be are going to help you win, if you're Pat Garofalo or you're a legislative candidate that's running, do you want to be talking about horse dewormer and Joe Rogan, or do you want to be talking about other issues that matter most to Minnesotans? And what I saw in that tweet from Jensen was, I think, the firm realization, and I've heard this from other people, but I saw it for the first time, that Scott Jensen is about Scott Jensen, and that he has come up with that this campaign is really not about solving problems. It's not about putting Minnesota in a better spot. It's about providing a platform for Scott Jensen just to go out there and just talk about what he wants to talk about. He's kind of, and so I don't think that I just, for a number of reasons, I don't consider Jensen to be a quality, credible candidate for governor. But to see him go out there on the day that his opponent is announcing, and what he chooses to talk about that day is horse dewormer, I think is a precursor, is a little bit of foreshadowing of what Republicans can plan what next year is going to be like if Jensen is the candidate. You're going to have a candidate who is willing to take away any opportunities that Republicans have to win, any of that momentum that may be exhibited in other parts of the country. When you have a candidate that's sitting down and saying, okay, my opponent just announced, and you know what I'm going to talk about today? I'm going to talk about horse dewormer. That right there should scare Republicans that Jensen is a bad candidate. He's running a bad campaign. And if I'm a Democrat, if I'm the DFL party right now, I'm doing everything I can to promote Jensen or to make sure that I'm not doing anything to trip him up, because I think as I've said consistently on social media, I think in a race against Walz, I think Scott Jensen is DOA. I think he's like the Hindenburg. I think he will just cataclysmically explode and have there be just a mess. And one of the multiple points I bring up as an example I brought up in the past, but my best example is yesterday, horse dewormer. I mean, literally horse dewormer.
Well, Michael, I don't know what you're talking about. I think Jensen is a fine candidate.
You're exactly, yes. And so what I think, and, you know, to go back to that tweet, I think Representative Garofalo, and, you know, I think is trying to have it both ways. I think he simultaneously, and so his tweet that he sent out was, he was concerned about, he wanted to send out a tweet talking about, he's concerned about people not using Facebook to get, you know, to glean COVID information and all that other type of stuff. What I find so interesting about his tweet about Jensen and the event, Matt, is that if you notice, Representative Garofalo took advantage of a recently new feature on Twitter, which allows people, if you're not mentioned in the tweet, you can't respond, you can't reply. Mm-hmm. So the tweet he sent out announcing that he was hosting this event for Jensen, he limited the ability of people to respond unless they were tagged in the tweet, which they weren't. And then when he announced this kind of larger statement about misinformation, that was open for anyone to comment. And so I think it's inconsistent. If you're going to host event, if you're going to host an event for Scott Jensen, who has repeatedly gotten clipped on social media for spreading misinformation, who's out there spending time talking about horse dewormer, I think if Representative Garofalo is truly concerned about misinformation, as I tweeted, I hope he uses his opportunity when he's hosting an event for Scott Jensen to talk about Jensen, to message to that crowd that is going to be in that room, because it's very likely that some of the people that Representative Garofalo is concerned about spreading misinformation very well likely may be in that room.
Yeah. And by the way, it should be pointed out, Walz is clearly making his reelection campaign about his pandemic response. And it's almost like he's trying to bait the Republicans to go with Jensen, because if it comes down to I went with the Mayo Clinic versus I went with horse dewormer, that's not going to be a fair race. And I think your point, your analysis of the of Jensen's chances if he does become the nominee are pretty spot on. One final thing we should also throw out there is redistricting is coming up here. And regardless, I mean, that's one thing that Republicans, that's going to be a tough thing, because that is the population has grown towards the metro core, which means more seats in the metro, more seats in the suburbs. It's going to have an impact this next election cycle. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be interested to see what happens with the Senate once they finally get those borders set.
Yeah, I mean, I was involved in redistricting in 2000 and in 2010. And in both of those instances when I was involved, the data was much more on the side of the Republicans. And now it's not. The growth is in areas where Democrats are traditionally, you know, making some gains. It's in the suburban areas. And if Republicans want to lead statewide, they have to win statewide. And in some of these areas where the population trends are, you know, there are opportunities for Democrats to pick up some seats, because Republicans have lost their way in the suburbs. And, you know, to not beat a dead horse, and the play on words is intentional there, I don't think talking about horse dewormer is going to be the ticket for Republicans to win back the suburbs. I spent a lot of time in a variety of roles canvassing the state and talking to voters. And I can't think of the last time I had a voter come up to me and talk to me about their concern about horse dewormer. But that's what Republicans are going to get if they nominate someone like Scott Jensen. And to you, Matt, I understand kind of the wink and the nod joke there, because if I was a DFL, I'd be doing the same thing. I'd be out there saying, Jensen, and they're playing this race very smart, because what they have is they have a candidate like him who, on a day when there's an opportunity to talk about a whole broad host of issues, he decides to talk about, a horse dewormer.
Well, and I'll say this. What have we learned in the last 5 years? That basically comes down to two different people. And I don't even want, frankly, as much as I joke about it, I don't want Scott Jensen to even have a whiff of the St. Paul. I don't want him to have a chance at it. I'm hoping the Republican Party finds a better candidate, because quite literally, if that guy was to win governor, holy God, you thought the Ventura administration was somewhat incompetent. I can't even comprehend what the things would be like under Jensen. We do have to stop there. I do once again want to encourage everyone out there. The girls are gone. That book is sensational about the Rocky kids. That obviously you should be reading that. It's truly a great book. And also Missing in Minnesota is where you can keep up to date on that case. Also, follow Michael Broadcorp on Twitter. It's fantastic. It is actually a really good place to get insight into what's going on within the Minnesota GOP and Republican politics and politics as a whole. It's not just Republican. He covers all politics, and he covers it pretty well. Michael Broadcorp. Michael, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir, as always. Have a great day. Stay warm.
Take care. Michael Broadcorp, we'll spotlight that. Come on back. Oh no. I think Jensen is a fine, fine candidate. Oh, God. Oh, God, no. What's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950?